Welcome to the Trauma Survivorhood Podcast. I'm your host, Sarah Miley, an IFS-informed certified trauma recovery coach. This show features interviews from survivors all over the world as they share their impactful story of thriving in their post-traumatic growth. We explore resources, tools, and coping skills to support the trauma survivor community. Enjoy. Welcome back to the Trauma Survivorhood Podcast. I'm your host, Sarah Miley. I have with us today Jill Miller. Jill is a pioneer in forging relevant links between the worlds of fitness, yoga, athletics, massage, and pain management. She's studied movement and the human body for more than 30 years. She is the author of best-selling books, her latest one called Body by Breath, and also The Role Model. She's also the creator of fitness formats, trademarked Yoga Tune-Up, and The Role Model Method. She's also contributing author to many medical texts, as well as being featured in Wall Street Journal, Shape, Men's Journal, Good Housekeeping, and many, many more. She's trained thousands of movement education She's trained thousands of movement educators, clinicians, and manual therapists to incorporate her paradigm-shifting self-care fitness programming into athletic and medical facility programs internationally. She's a wife, she's a mother of two children, and she has a rescue dog. She loves dark chocolate, and she's recommitted to her first love, which is singing. So Jill, thank you so much for being here today. Let's just jump right in. Tell us a little bit more about your journey. So 30 years in this movement world, how did you get here? How do we land today?
30 years. Let me do some calculations because I think I need to update my bio because I started to explore my body. I started to try to work with my body around age 11, 12. Was when I think I can see the genesis of moving into my body as a resource for self-regulation. I was an overweight child and very, very sedentary. I was very bookish. I had very thick glasses. I was the shortest kid in the class. I was the roundest kid in the class. You get the picture. And around age 11 or 12, my mom brought home two videos, beta videos. So I'm almost 52 years old. And we lived in a solar home off the grid in Santa Fe, New Mexico. And so if we wanted to watch anything, it was going to be a video. And at the time, beta was like, that was the new tech. So she brought home the Jane Fonda workout and the Raquel Welch yoga video one time. And, she wasn't into fitness or anything like that either. And we started to do these tapes together. And I can just remember being totally sore, totally uncomfortable, totally out of touch, but completely in love with something that they gave me. And I became obsessed with doing them. My mom quickly fell off the train. But I think I made it my way through 2 weeks, and then 2 weeks turned into decades. But what happened to this little body was that I started to use movement to control my body and to control my shape. And I soon spiraled into a series of eating disorders that followed me up until about age 19. So I became anorexic in junior high, losing. Oh my gosh, I went down to 65 pounds. I was 4'9". I was really short, but I was inching at 100 pounds at that short height, but then lost a lot of weight through these practices, but also through restricting eating, not eating. And then by the time I got to college, I kept up the movement practices, but I started to binge and purge. So I never healed my anorexia. I just transitioned right into another way of controlling my body, which was through a bulimic disordered eating practices. And I was really searching for healing. I knew there was something wrong with me. I knew I couldn't stop. I was checking out books in the library on anorexia and bulimia. I was trying to read up on the phenomenon, but I still couldn't stop. And I remember confessing to a yoga teacher in college. So I went to a really good school, went to Northwestern, and I would take healing arts classes outside of the school. Like, you know, back in the day, there were always open houses everywhere, those little coffee shop poster boards. And so I went to I actually started to do work study at a yoga studio, and I did work study at a massage studio locally. And I mentioned to this one yoga teacher that I could not feel my abs, you know, because I was in the dance department and we did sit-ups, and I could never feel my abs. People were aching around me with their sore abs, and I never had sore abs. And I knew it was connected to the bulimia. I just knew it. And she suggested that I lay belly down on a prop. And the prop she showed me was this sand-filled bean bag that looked like a hamburger bun. And in the yoga space at the time, that prop was really designed for headstands. I can't even explain how it was done for headstands, but she said, lay belly down on this prop and just breathe into it. And so I did. And the pain in my guts, the pain in my body was so intense. It was so horrible. But what that moment did was it started to connect my emotions to the physical pain, visceral pain that I was having. And I started to feel what I had been doing to myself, what I had been running from for the past 19 years of my life. And so I adapted the practice. I started to roll up a hand towel in my dorm room. So I would roll up a hand towel. I would fashion it into a honey bun or cinnamon bun shape. And I would, first thing in the morning, I would lay down and I would move this towel all around my abdomen and breathe and feel. And this is one of the ways that I began to be able to let go of my disordered eating behavior and start to tend and mend and befriend myself, and to start to actually have the emotions that I couldn't have, that the eating behaviors were covering or allowing me to numb. So I discovered my healing was through my body, not just through the chatter in my head or talking out loud about it, but I had to go through my body to feel my way out.
Wow. What great somatic awareness from that teacher who had you do that, just to get yourself back into that soma body and reconnect your mind and your body together. And of course, yeah, what you found in there was probably really painful, but good for you for sticking with it, because some people would have been, oh no, it hurts and hurting is bad, and so let's be done. And you seem like you really welcomed that challenge. That was a lot of great insight on her part. I can appreciate that. That somatic experiencing is now a practice that a lot of survivors use, and a somatic awareness, and there's somatic emotional releases that are available, like just getting into your body, which is very difficult for people to do. So I applaud you on that. How can survivors find that? How can they find that calm using movement? You know, you ended up kind of finding this way that became control, which was obviously something that was probably predisposition in your brain already of what was going on. But if they're looking for a calm, stress release, how is movement linked to that in our brains when our bodies are doing this movement?
Well, what I was describing to you in that experiential self massage was really palpation as a movement, right? So touch as a movement, especially if you have a lot of trauma in your background. This is Trauma Survivor Podcast. Being touched by another can either be very soothing or it can be very threatening. And for me, the process-based work was, at first, this was very much on my own. This was in my dorm room. I mean, I got the guidance from that teacher. She didn't give me any other guardrails for that. And, you know, the new book I've written, Body by Breath, really is examined best practices for this. And by the way, the best practice is not to lay on a sandbag on your viscera. It's extremely painful, but there are other ways to gently coax your way into a self-touch or a gentle movement practice that can allow for the body to enter into a parasympathetic state or a calm, rest, digest, recover state. Sometimes calm, rest, digest, recover is not the place that bodies need to go when they're processing in different phases of their trauma recovery. Sometimes where they need to go is very amplified, very sympathetic, building of high stress tolerance. But what the body by breath work and a lot of what my work tries to do is help people to tolerate and endure parasympathetic states. Yeah. Because one of, I think, the challenges of a trauma body is we tend to spin out and stay, you know, treading water and cover everything, the ocean of pain underneath. And so we'll just keep going, being productive, until we have a breakdown, until we fall apart. Our body will break down in order to get us to stop. And so I call this approach, or in the book, I outlined an approach, it's called the 5 P's of the parasympathetic nervous system. And it's a way to invite a resting response. It's a way to invite a present awareness of a relaxation response in your body. If you want, I can go over those 5 P's because I think it might be very helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. Before you jump into that, can you just, for people that are listening that maybe don't know, can you talk about what chronic stress or chronic complex trauma actually does to the body? Like what stress actually does inside of the body? And then, I'd love to hear the 5 P's.
Yeah, the simple way of stating it is that it's catabolic. Mm. Catabolic meaning it eats away at you. It is not necessarily life preserving or life enhancing. And all of you who are in your trauma process now, all of you have different systems of the body that are under duress from the chronic trauma, right? So for some of you, it's just rampant autoimmune stuff that pops up all the time. For others of you, it's reproductive issues. For others, it's your digestive system. For others, it's the cardiovascular system. For others, it's musculoskeletal pain, or it's fascial related pain. And then fascia is my subject matter expert in that topic. So I can kind of include that here and there for you, but that's a very complex topic. But so understandably, there are these different systems of the body, and who knows why which system decides to be the one that I'll take the hit for all of you. Right. I'll handle all the pressure for the rest of you. So trauma eats away at our well-being, and then it also deeply affects the systems of our body, the cells of our body, because of the change in activation of hormones, the change in activation of immune cells, and so on.
Beautifully said, yeah.
So, I mean, that's a huge topic. But what we get when we dive into the parasympathetic nervous system's virtues is we get a chance to tamp down that sympathetic overflow, that chronic overflow of sympathetic arousal, and we have a chance to recalibrate, to restore, repair, regenerate. And like I was saying, I think that it's very challenging for many bodies to tolerate being in a parasympathetic state. Why? Because that's when your big feelings come up. That's when the deep feels come up. And it can be absolutely unmanageable to feel your sorrow, your grief, your rage, your fear. And so these things obviously are best done in connection with another who can witness you or who can help you feel safe. But for folks that are like, I think I want to face some of this on my own and see what I can do to adjust my nervous system so that I can go face that other person who I know I can be with. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's complicated, but there are things that one can do on one's own to make shifts in the nervous system. And so these 5 P's are really helpful. Would you like me to share them?
Yes, please. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes. So, and I will link all this also in the show notes. I'll have them written down out there because I think that'll be helpful for people to read them as well. Yeah.
The first P is a little heady. The first P is mindset. Mm-hmm. The first P is about being willing to orient yourself towards healing. Mm-hmm. And in terms of the relaxation response, which the 5 P's really helped you to organize, One of the mindsets, for example, that you can employ, and this is something you would say to yourself, is something like, all of me is welcome here.
Yeah.
Or I am a safe place. Or something even more general, I embody my body. Mm. Right. So we find a mindset that we can, that is a little ambitious, but that will host our body's feelings so that we're welcome here. All of the feelings that are going to be arising are welcome to the party. None of them are disavowed. None of them are told to be put to the side. So that's what the mindset does. It acts as a gracious host for the embodied process. Mm-hmm. The second P is place. Mm-hmm. Now, hopefully you can find a place that is safe, that allows you to do your process. So there's another P, process. But the place ideally should be safe for you. And so that could be the bathroom floor. Mm-hmm. That could be under the covers. Or it could be any space where you're distraction free. It is very important to be distraction free. And in terms of the real relaxation response, like the real one, yeah. Not bright lights is also helpful, because we also want to not have too much input into the optic nerve. So a little darkness is helpful if that feels safe for you. If it doesn't, don't even think twice about it. Yeah. So we have perspective. We have place. The third P is position. Mm. So position helps us to take advantage of some of the pressure receptors within the heart and the neck. Mm. And so ideally, when you're doing a relaxation practice, you can recline on the ground or on a bed, or even better, create a gentle slope. And a gentle slope is a position where your pelvis is slightly higher than your heart, which is slightly higher than your head. So this can look as simple as lay down on the ground or on your bed, and then lift your bottom up and place it on top of a couple of books or a thick pillow, or I use my product, which is called the Gorgeous Ball. It's an inflated ball. So we have people slope up on that. And what that does is it creates a very gentle slope of the body where the heart is higher than the head. And when the heart is higher than the head, your blood flow is affected by the force of gravity, right? So not that your blood's going to flow all over your body, but there's going to be a fill pressure that moves towards your brain. And your brain can only handle so much blood, and you have extremely refined neural guards on the side of your neck, notably in the carotid artery, that control how much blood is flowing towards the head. And so when the carotid start to bulge, there's a nerve called the vagus nerve that is picking up on that blood pressure increase. And it quickly signals to the brainstem that we must slow down the heart rate, we must constrict all the blood vessels, and we must slow down the breath rate. This is called the baroreceptor reflex. So said simply, when you go a little bit upside down-ish, you automatically start to slow down your breath rate, slow down your heart rate, so that there's no extra blood coming into your brain. And so this is a way to induce calm just by position alone.
Wow. Beautiful.
So we have perspective, we have place, we have position. Now the fourth P is pace of breath. Mm, yeah. Pace of breath. Breathing is an incredible tool that you can harness to adjust the intensity going on within your nervous system. Now, many of the bodies I work with, sometimes breath, even cueing breath, can be threatening in and of itself. We can talk about that today, or we can talk about it another time. But in a kind of ideal situation, you're breathing much more slowly than you normally do. Yes. And if you can, you want to emphasize that your exhales are longer than your inhales. So you just changing the pace of your breathing and making it slower than normal, and that your exhale overtakes the length of your inhale. Now there are lots of fancy ways that you can do this. I have them peppered throughout Body by Breath. But really the short version is just slow down your breathing, make that breathing consistent, and your exhale is longer than your inhale. That also amplifies the impact of the vagus nerve upon the heart, right? So that will slow us down even more, relax us even more. Mm. And then the fifth P is palpation. The fifth P uses strategic ways of pressing into the body using soft, pliable implements. That's my business. I have my business, Tune Up Fitness. We make balls called the role model balls that are grippy, pliable balls or gushy balls that have tender touch into the body, and using them in strategic ways, especially on areas that tend to commingle tensions that they're pretty consistent across a lot of populations. I've seen this for the 2 decades that I've been doing this work. There are definite little portals where if we do self-massage upon them, there is a reflexive relaxation throughout your body. And so the palpation is very important ingredient. And of course, it is modulated and moderated by each person's pain pressure threshold. And so that's something that you can calibrate and adjust over time with practice. Yeah. So those are the 5 P's.
Wow, that sounds lovely. So how long would someone be in this type of a practice doing these palpations once you get yourself in the position and changing that breath rate a little bit? How long would you do something like this for?
Oh, well, a minimum would be 2 minutes. You can have a good downshift in 2 minutes to sort of accumulate a sustained state. I would do practices anywhere between 5 and 20 minutes. Okay. It's a really good gauge. You can get a profound amount of shift in that 10-minute window. But you know, it's just amazing how quickly it can work if you stack these 5 P's together. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, I can sense the relaxation. Like, that sounds really lovely. Like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. All of the different, science that's behind all of that. So I love the way that you mentioned with the cueing of the breath, right? So I know if I'm helping a client invite the parasympathetic nervous system, we're going to do that long exhale. And if they're able to do any breath manipulation, which, as you noted, this can be very triggering for some people and very activating, but it's generally like an elongated exhale of like you count in, you know, in for 3, out for 6, or in for 4, out for 8. In this practice, are you trying to do, if cueing is accessible to you, are you doing anything that invites a brain activity like counting, or are you just trying to gauge that the exhale is longer?
Yeah, it really depends on the student or the client. Some people I have found are averse to counting. Like, it's too much busy work. But other people need the counting because they have a difficult time. The breath can get a little bit strangled or self-conscious. Okay. So sometimes giving the mind a couple of other tasks, yes, is helpful. My favorite way to do the counting is a very highly interoceptive exercise, which is to have a light touch of your thumb and index finger on each hand. So you don't need to hold your hands up like you're, you know, in a cave meditating, but you're just, if you're laying on the ground, all you have to do with the backs of your arms are on the ground is just make this little tiny loop. And then the loop is self-perpetuating. Once the fingers touch, you don't even have to use muscle tension. They'll literally stick to each other. Your skin is a very sticky substance. Plus you have all these ridges. And so it'll just sort of lock in place. And within that, you'll close your eyes and drive your attention to your fingertips. And the quieter you get, the more you might be able to sense the throb in your fingertips, which is the evidence of your heart beating. And you feel that in the little capillary beds in there. And so what I'll do is I'll have people pace out their breathing with their own heartbeat. So let's say inhale for 4 heartbeats, exhale for 6.
Yeah.
Right. That would be a very short frame, but we also create other parts of the breath cycle. You can do a little tiny hold at the top. You can do a longer hold at the bottom. And so people will go through these cycles, and that seems to be very entertaining to people's minds. They get to feel, they get to count, they get to breathe. So they have these 3 things going on at the same time. And that seems to be a really good sort of compound pharmacy for a breath prescription.
Beautiful. Yeah. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense to me. I love that. So, before we jump into a little bit more, because I want to hear a little bit more about the book and I want to hear a little bit more about this, as it's an excellent resource, Body by Breath. But we do know that with trauma survivors specifically, and that's the majority of our audience, is that this can be challenging to take on movement, health, wellness, fitness. Those can all be kind of triggering words, especially for someone who's really exhausted in a trauma healing journey. Like you mentioned, disordered eating or eating disorders, maybe even just a general lack of self-worth, where they're just not even able to focus on self-care like that. So what would be some small, really just practical steps for a survivor who wants to get started on a health and wellness journey?
Yeah, a lot of the focus of Body by Breath is on the trunk. And so I can see how for many people that is extremely threatening and may not feel like the best place to begin. And for people who are very challenged by being in their body and have a lot of ingrained fears of their body or have biases against their own body or parts of their body, where I like to start with them is their hands and feet. So we go out to the periphery and we'll do exercises that are very low charge, but they're very, very profound. And the reason they are profound is because they're so highly sensing. And so because one of the things I teach is self-massage, we'll use the small grippy rubber balls on the hands and feet. And that seems to feel like a safe place. It also is very anchoring. And then if you understand the interesting web of fascial tissues throughout the body, when I'm working on your hand, I'm also working on the same fascial train that goes right up through your wrist, forearm, elbow, shoulder, neck, right across that area of the carotid that I described before, right up into your face. And so I'm able to minimize unknown stresses that you might have in your jaw or, you know, where your bra strap hits you just by working through your thumb. So people seem to be really interested in that. And then I can also compel them to do that because, you know, you are probably holding your phone a lot. And also people who have a trauma response can also have unconscious hand clenching. This is just like that bracing for a punch. So you can see certain tension behaviors in the digits and in the wrist. And also it's wonderful to just be able to stretch your hand in a way you didn't know your hand had this capability. And the same thing goes for the feet. So in terms of the fascial pathway, when we work the feet, we're working our way right up through the ankle, lower leg, knee, thigh, pelvis, low back. So we get really a global response by working on these perimeters. And it feels more safe. When you work on the feet also, it gives people an incredible sense of groundedness, of stability. Because a lot of times the trauma will make us, you know, fly out up here. We're going to be up here and, you know, just in our head and lost up here. And this is a way to settle in. Yeah. And from my perspective, a little bit of movement begets a little bit more movement. And that is the win. Yeah. So I'm not out here to say, let's strengthen our glutes and, you know, and I certainly never advocate or promote or sell myself as a person that is trying to adjust body fat. I don't have a program that is pathologizes that. I understand it all too well. You know, we're just trying to find a safe space in our body, especially when our body has been the thing that has betrayed us again and again. So it's a process. And I'm here for it.
Yeah. I appreciate that. The nice connection of somatics and well-being and health. I love that idea of grounding. That makes a lot of sense to me. I'm thinking about like feet reflexology, right? Like that's one of those tools in Eastern medicine, right? Where they're working even in areas of your organs and things. And it is a very grounding kind of feeling. And I can appreciate that, because if you can get into a small part of your body, you've opened a smaller a window that now you can get into the larger pieces. So yeah, that's really beautiful. Oh, Jill, I really appreciate having you on here. I definitely want you to be able to show your book. I know there's tons of, you know, anatomy and science. This is a very, very science-backed process and program that you have. So I want you to be able to talk about that. And then after you show us that book, which is a beautiful resource for trauma survivors, a few things that were helpful in your journey. So you've obviously gone through a lot with the eating disorder and being very disconnected to yourself somatically as well. What were some of those important resources that you had before you had a beautiful book like this?
Oh, wow. Well, all the thousands of resources, many of them are in this book.
Yes.
So this is the book. It's 480 pages of half the book is practices. That's the back of the book. And very detailed pictures of the practices. And then the first half of the book is the anatomy and physiology that dig into why this type of work is effective for resilience and for building what I mentioned earlier, this parasympathetic endurance, the ability to tolerate parasympathetic states. There's so many resources, but I guess one that I'd like to point out is that will probably connect with your audience, especially because you mentioned somatic experiencing. So there's a chapter that describes polyvagal theory. And obviously, that's way too complex to describe in a short podcast. But I would say that polyvagal theory offers a really wonderful frame for understanding not just the vagus nerve and the body's responses, but also for me, because of the purpose of the book is this body by breath, it also helps me to explain to people muscle tension patterns that show up in the breathing body in different zones of respiration. So yeah, I won't dive into all of that, but the palpation work, the position work, all of this really helps to disentangle unknown restrictions in these three areas. And also, you know, people may be having unknowable, like they don't know why they keep hitting this panic button or this trigger button. And it could be connected to scar tissue in your abdomen or low back. And so the book really helps you to understand, you know, how these things are all connected. And it gives you tools on how to disentangle and explore and be with that exploration in a very human way. None of this is about like, I'm just going to, you know, turn a page and all of it's going to be gone. Yeah. We have to go through this process in order to move forward.
Yes.
So resources, there's just too many to list. citations galore, masters that I've studied with. How I came to explore it was I always needed to know why was I hurting myself? Why did I choose this way of harming myself? And why was this working to help me heal? And so that's really what I tried to offer throughout the book. Yeah.
Yeah. It sounds like a beautiful awakening that you had. And that's really hard to explore self-injurious behavior. It's a difficult process. And also trauma recovery in general is a difficult process. I am always looking for that page I can turn and it's all just going to be fine, but it does not exist. You're very, very true. It's like healing is not on the other page. Healing is on the page that you're on now, because if you're in the process and you're in the recovery journey, you're already doing it. It's arduous. And I like to call it a maze because it's certainly not linear. It's not even often circular, because eventually you're jumping off of different cycles. So it's just a maze. There's some dead ends. There's some ropes that keep you going for a really long time. You can break down a few walls here and there, but you're still in the maze. It's very powerful to have people who can come alongside you. And we don't talk often enough, or I feel like we don't. I think we're getting there about talking about the somatic connection from the brain to the body. So I can appreciate your work. And I just want to acknowledge you and honor you for that, because getting back into the body, which is so difficult for trauma survivors, people without trauma do not understand how unsafe the body often is for us. So I really appreciate that there's a slow process here, that there's some self-guided ways to do it. It doesn't have to be with a practitioner until you're ready. Or if the self-guided stuff is too difficult, you can find practitioners. So this is really beautiful work. I really want to thank you and honor you for being on here today. Please tell people where they can find you, where they can find the book, where they can learn more about this. And I'll have all this linked up in the show notes below.
Yes. The easiest place to find me is the website, tuneupfitness.com. Okay. I'm also pretty out there on Instagram. My handle is the Jill Miller. All one word. We also have a TuneUp Fitness brand page on Instagram as well. And I offer teacher trainings, both online and in person. And I have a weekly class that if you're like, I'm interested in this, but I don't know if reading a book is going to help me with it. I just want somebody to guide me. I have opportunities for you to do that every week. You can become mentored in the online program, or you can just take a class whenever you want. But we have filmed all 103 exercises in the book. And so we're turning that into an app, because I do understand that many people are visual learners and they're not necessarily book learners. So there's that resource that's coming up. What else can I tell you? Yeah, I think that's about it. And there's also teachers. So I've trained thousands of people worldwide. There's an index on our website. If you're looking for a local teacher in your area, which I think is always the best way to study, is in person with another who can witness you. And you just put your zip code in, you can find, hopefully in your area, a local teacher.
Awesome. Yeah, that's a great resource right there. Yeah, I'll have all that linked up. Is the book available? Is it through your publisher? Is it also on Amazon? Can they find it anywhere? Yeah, Amazon. Okay.
Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Walmart, all the usual suspects, but Amazon tends to be where people go most.
Yes. Excellent. I really appreciate it. Thank you so much, Jill Miller. It's been awesome having you on today. Have a great rest of your day.
Thank you. You too.
Bye-bye. Thank you for listening to or watching this episode of the Trauma Survivorhood Podcast. Please subscribe, like, share, and follow. For any information that was discussed in this podcast episode, check out the show notes below. Until next time, be well.